you can see it in copper. You can see it in zinc and lead and aluminum and nickel. The global stockpiles of these physical metals are not just declining, they are depleting. You start to wonder if the same thing could happen with silver.
This is Kaiser Johnson with Liberty in Finance, and this is the Miles Franklin Weekly Special for January 31st through February 7th, 2023, while supplies last. This week we feature 2023 Austrian Silver Philharmonics at just $3.29 over spot per ounce. Frequently regarded as one of the most beautiful sovereign coins, the Austrian Philharmonic portrays instruments from the Vienna Orchestra on one side and the grand pipe organ from the famed Augsburg Golden Hall on the other, all in 3/9 fine pure silver, with a face value of 1.5 euro. These 2023 Philharmonics come 20 to a tube, 500 to a box, are just $3.29 over spot, and are IRA eligible. And if you'd like to learn more about a precious metals IRA, call us, and we'll be happy to help you in that process. Our number for all orders is 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237. We're available after hours and on weekends, and we look forward to speaking with you.
Hey everyone, this is Elijah K. Johnson with Liberty in Finance. And back with us today is our good friend Craig Hemke from tfmetalsreport.com. Craig, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey Elijah, good to see you, my friend.
It's great to see you. And last time we had you on, we talked about your year-end forecast that you issued on your TF Metals report. And you were talking about how the first 6 months of the year was going to be very choppy. There were going to be times when, you know, that people were possibly going to be shaken out. So it's important if you're in here for the long game for precious metals to just, you know, hold tight probably. Your perspective on what we've been seeing in the last week or so with this pretty dramatic pullback here.
Yeah, Elijah, it's again, I write a report early every January now, have for the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. And if anything, it's a way of kind of making me get my own act together and, you know, around the holidays, you know, and look back at what I got wrong the year before and then hold myself accountable. You know, here's what I was thinking and here's what I got wrong and try to learn from it, you know, so it doesn't just get lost in the ether. And this year's report's still on my website. Anybody can go look it up. You can find it on Google, too. I think you just type TF Metals Report. It's called One Step Beyond, and you'll find it. It's published, public link. The general thesis of it is all things being equal, and obviously all things aren't equal year from, you know, year over year. But economically and monetarily, this year of 2023 is a lot like 2010 and 2019, which were years that also began with Fed rhetoric about hiking rates and no more QE and that sort of thing. But then as soon as it was apparent that the economy was rolling over, here came the rate cuts, and eventually here came the QE. And so I think we're, you know, analogous to that. The important thing then, the important conclusion to draw in terms of the short-term direction of the metals, is that in the first half of 2010 and in the first half of 2019, gold and silver basically went sideways. There were a couple of fits and starts. They rolled up to the top of what had been their trading range and then fell back. I kind of figure the same thing's going to happen here, right? I mean, the Fed, for whatever reason, is talking about still hiking rates, and I think they're wrong about that. And that every time they start talking about it, or every time there's a bit of data or alleged data, like the latest jobs report, everybody's going to start getting worried about rate hikes and higher for longer and all that kind of stuff. And you get these kind of fits and starts. And that's what we got. We got this huge rally in gold to start the year, about $150. And then we got a $100 pullback in 2 days. You know, the old classic stair step up and elevator shaft down. That's just the first of what I expect to be several of those between now and, say, May or June. And then once we get to the point, Elijah, where it's generally accepted and understood that, yeah, the U.S. economy is really in dire straits and that the Fed is going to be cutting, that's when finally gold will break out above 2000. And that's when silver will begin to move higher through 26 and 28 and then break out, you know, toward 30. But it's probably not going to happen before then. And so that's why everybody's got to kind of understand that, again, I hate to use the word patient, but you're going to have to hang in there for a few more months before we finally get the upside.
And the funny thing is, if people wait until the Fed makes that announcement, they're too late often. So what are the signposts that people should be looking for that tells the market that, yes, the Fed is going to be lowering rates now, reversing? What are those signposts? Because it seems like gold will then, gold will anticipate the pivot. It won't react to the pivot.
Right. And then you end up chasing, which is why it's so important, you know, not to, you know, to remain patient and understand what's going on here. This is a process. There are three things that come to mind immediately, three signposts, if you will. One of them is from the Fed itself. In the past, when we get to come to the end of a hiking cycle, it is anywhere from 1 to 4 months before the Fed's first cut, the distance of time from their last hike to their last cut. So say it's on average 2 or 3 months. So if we get to a point where it's acknowledged that the Fed says, okay, that's as high as we're going to go because of the data or whatever, then you can figure we're within 2 to 3 months, 60, 90 days of the first cut. And that's actually what the Fed funds futures market is showing. They're still projecting 2 rate cuts before the end of the year in the Fed funds futures, probably September and December. So be on the lookout for that. Usually it's a very short period of time between the last hike and the last cut. So when you hear about the last hike, know that now we're on to watch. Second, watch the unemployment report. I don't even want to get into how bogus the one we got last Friday is, but because it doesn't matter what I think or what anybody thinks, because all the Fed does is look at that headline number. Well, that headline number is about the most lagging indicator of all of economic strength, that and the unemployment rate. Typically, that bottoms out right before the recession begins. Okay, so we are, when they're talking about unemployment rate being the lowest it's been in, you know, however long, tells you where we are in terms of how close we are to the recession starting. And then third, watch the rate of inflation month over month, because what the Fed keeps talking about is, you know, oh, we got to get inflation down to under 3%, you know, or whatever. Think of the annualized inflation number, which is still whatever, 6.5%. Think of it kind of like a moving average, right? It's the last 12 months of month over month. So what happens is, as like next week, we're going to get the January CPI. Well, in the year-over-year calculation, you're going to kick out the January 2022 number and add January 2023. The December was basically flat. January probably flat too. If that trend continues, you know, to June, then you're going to be replacing month over month numbers from last year that were 4 and 5 and, you know, there were big, huge jumps with negative or flat numbers. And the whole annualized number is going to fall dramatically by summertime. You see what I'm saying? And so the Fed then will have the opportunity, and I'm already starting to see this on Twitter, to say, well, we can stop hiking rates now because we've got Fed funds to 5. And, you know, the CPI annualized is at 3.5. You know, so we've affected, hey, look at us. We've gotten the Fed funds rate over the inflation rate. Now we can start cutting. And they'll use that as cover. So watch those three things. Watch when the Fed stops, because you know then we're getting close by any historical measure. Watch those jobs reports going forward. And see if they start, you know, maybe they'll fix the one that just came out, you know, and start coming in at 100,000 and below expectations. And watch those monthly CPI numbers too. Those would be the three things.
And speaking of the jobs report, I was just talking to Robert Keynes over at Gold Silver Pros, and he was kind of breaking down how it, you know, it was really a misleading jobs report. A lot of the jobs that were added were probably, you know, second or third jobs that people are having to take on. So as opposed to being, you know, a very positive number, in reality, it was probably negative if so many people are having to take on second or third jobs.
Right. And there were a couple of things going on. There was a massive, what they call seasonal adjustment, which again, just a make-believe statistical addition of something like 3 million, the largest one-month seasonal adjustment that the Bureau of Labor Statistics ever put on, 3 million jobs. Okay, well, that impacts the final number. But even more at the grassroots level, Elijah, and this is a thing that never gets, I mean, Rob sees this, I see this. Honest people on Twitter see this, but you'll never get this reported by those that have a vested interest in pumping a larger number out to the masses. Of that 500, whatever they said, 517,000 new jobs, there were 600 and I think it was 47,000 new part-time jobs. So you can obviously make the case that of that entire number, you know, that was trumpeted from the, you know, the rooftops, was all part-time jobs. And the way the BLS does this, again, and this is an oversimplification, but this is how it works. If you're a regular hardworking, you know, middle-income person, and you've got a good salary job in an office, and you're making, $80,000 a year with benefits and PTO and all that kind of stuff, and because of downsizing or, you know, whatever, you get laid off. Well, first you get severance, so you don't immediately show up in the initial jobless claims until your severance runs out. But you also got to put food on the on your table, right? So you lose your high quality, like I said, salaried with benefits and PTO job, and you try to replace it, and you replace that income, and you do it with maybe three part-time jobs. You know, you're working at Costco, restocking the shelves, yeah, whatever. Now, for you, the person, that's a terrible deal. And that's not that's a bad trade. But the Bureau of Labor Statistics looks at that as a net gain of two jobs. So that's how the math works. And I mean, it is what it is. But no one dare report that or tell you that because it doesn't fit whatever narrative is trying to be promoted in the media.
Now, I did want to move back to how this is going to impact the precious metal markets. If we do have a economy that is, as you mentioned last time, you know, in the ditch, it seems like this is very positive for precious metals. And all that's really left is for the Fed to acknowledge that and pivot.
Right. Yeah, it is. But you're going to get wrong footed. They're going to and the market is going to try to wrong foot you multiple times between now and that acknowledgement. And that's what that warning was about, you know, understand you're going to try to get shaken out. I mean, look, Elijah, if you can figure this out, if even dumb old me can figure this out where this is going, because we understand the history, well, you could probably assume that people with really big dollars, bank trading desks, you know, hedge funds and the like, they can probably figure this out too, which is maybe all part of why the stock market's been rallying. But so when you sell, if you go sell your metal or sell out of your mining stocks or whatever, somebody's buying, right? Somebody's taking that position from you. Don't give it to them. Okay. Hang in there. Be patient. And again, it's not that all things are equal, and it's not that history always completely perfectly repeats itself. Who knows what's going to happen geopolitically? I mean, anything can happen in the next 5 or 6 months. However, as we sit here in early February of 2023, it is clear in so many ways that we are almost exactly where we were in early February of 2019, early February of 2010. And we know what happened after that. Again, I mean, silver in 2010, in the back half of the year, went from 18 to 30. Gold in 3 months in 2019 went from about 1,300 to 1,600. I mean, you can get these huge rallies. And then the main thing that people need to remember is it wasn't 2010 and 2019 where the big gains came in. It was 2011 and 2020. And that gets to your point, Elijah, is you never want to end up chasing. You never want to be, you know, sitting there, I was going to time it just perfectly, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It's wise to instead maybe just buy good companies that you like if you're buying miners, buy physical metal. If you like the physical metal, buy it a little bit at a time, consistently. So you're buying high, you're buying low, you're averaging in, and then just let all this play out.
Dollar cost averaging is, yeah, like you say, a very wise way to do it there. Now, when it comes to, I guess, one of the things that you mentioned is when someone is selling, someone else is buying, right? So if you're selling, someone else is buying. And what we've been seeing in 2022, it was an all-time record of central bank buying, all-time record in the recorded history of that for buying gold. What is your perspective on that? It seems like we are seeing a seismic shift happening. And do you anticipate that to continue in 2023?
I do. For the second point I'll mention, the first point, though, is, yeah, the statistics last couple of years have seen the biggest central bank gold buying globally. U.S. isn't buying any, obviously. Canada isn't buying any. But globally, the most since 1968. What is significant about 1968? The summer of love was 69. 68 was all the assassinations and upheaval. But 68 was also the end of the London Gold Pool, which was that 7-year consortium of the U.S. and 7 other countries working together in London to keep the price of gold pegged at $35 an ounce. And that finally, the demand for gold was so great that, you know, they couldn't do it anymore. They'd worked for 7 years and then, you know, it blew up and eventually U.S. closed the gold window 3 years later. So I don't know if that's just coincidence that now we got the most central bank buying since the last big, huge change in the global gold market. Maybe it is just coincidence. But the second part is, you know, why would all these other banks be diversifying out of dollars and treasury holdings and into gold? For the same reason you and I are, right? Like I mentioned, you know, if this 57-year-old dope out here in the middle of nowhere can figure this out, then probably some overeducated central bankers around the world can see what's coming too. And they would rather than hold, I mean, they still hold dollars. Don't get me wrong. They still need dollars to trade within the current system and everything else. But out of their reserves, they're diversifying some of their savings, if you will, out of dollars into gold, which is exactly what you and I have done. When we take our hard work, we pay our bills, what's left is our savings, and we take some of our savings and buy gold. It's the same thing.
Now, you were also on Chris Marcus's Arcadia Economics, our good friend over there, and he asked you a pretty straightforward question of, on the silver side, when it comes to the silver deficit, it seems like it's getting worse and inventories of silver are being depleted. So what is the end game? That's what he asked you. And I guess I'll ask you this. What is the end game of this? If, you know, industry needs silver, but we're continuing to see the stockpiles being depleted.
Yeah, that again, all things being equal, right? We can look at 2010 and 2019 and try to make some forecasts of how far silver rallied under the same conditions and that sort of thing. And that's what I did in my macro cast this year. But that's another thing. And I'll get back to silver, but that you can see it in copper. You can see it in zinc and lead and aluminum and nickel. The global stockpiles of these physical metals are, I'm not just declining, they are depleting. I saw a thing on, I think it was either zinc or nickel, but at the LME 10 years ago, they had 200,000 metric tons in their vaults at the LME, the London Metals Exchange. They now have 20,000. Okay. Copper is, I mean, obviously about the most important industrial metal in the world, and known global stockpiles of copper are being depleted. And so you start to wonder if the same thing could happen with silver. One of the things that just came out yesterday is the Silver Institute, which is, I mean, not some kind of crazy tinfoil hat site like mine. The Silver Institute, you know, which came out, oh, I don't know, 60 days ago, is about the time silver really started to rally late last year, and said there's this huge supply deficit of 100 and whatever it was, 97 million ounces in 2022. They came out and revised that yesterday and said they underestimated the amount of industrial demand by, what was it, 30 million ounces, I think is what they missed, or 40 million ounces, something like that. And so now they're saying last year's supply deficit was actually 247 million ounces or something outrageous. Okay, well, that's a one-year anomaly, maybe. And maybe if there's a global economic slowdown, it won't be that great this year, but unless you recycle a lot of that silver is, you know, gone. It's in solar panels and, you know, all the other uses of it. What would be interesting is if we start to see from silver users some of the same things that we've seen in some of these other metals, including copper. In fact, Trafigura, I think is how you pronounce it. I never understood how, Trafigura, biggest commodity trading firm in the world, just withdrew a massive amount of their copper from the LME, from the LME vaults. And they said they did it because they are on the hook in all their trading activities of delivering copper over the next 3 to 6 months. And they wanted to make sure that they could do it. And they weren't going to take any chances with just leaving it in the vaults in London. So they actually took it out. What happens if, again, that not only depletes and reduces the leverage ability in these, you know, in the paper markets, what if that happens in silver? It could, very could, if, again, we continually run now 200 million ounce or more supply deficits in silver. And that throws, like I said, we can talk about, as I began this answer about yesterday, I think, we can talk about where silver will likely rally to, given the dollar coming down and rates coming down and renewed QE and all that stuff over the next year and a half. But that's a whole, you know, there are other factors like that that, I mean, talk about throwing a wrench in the works. I mean, that could change things dramatically.
It seems like we're already seeing this backdrop that is bullish for precious metals. But yeah, like you said, there are all these wild cards, and the supply of silver is one of them, where without the supply deficit, there's still bullish fundamentals for silver. But with it, it could be very explosive for the price.
No doubt. And again, you look at it, I printed this week, so I've been watching copper so closely. I wrote an article and used a chart. It goes back to 1970, where, and just a straight linear chart, where I plotted copper with silver and put them on the same chart. And you can see how closely correlated they are, as you'd kind of expect. I mean, we view silver as a monetary metal, but not a whole lot of people do. So you look at it as they're two industrial metals. And so they kind of move in tandem. And sometimes copper gets ahead and silver lags and they flip flop. Even right now, versus that historical correlation, silver is about 50% undervalued versus copper. So if copper continues to roll higher, which it might, that's another reason why silver is not going to stay. You're not going to see copper go from $4 to $8 and silver stay at 22. I mean, I just can't imagine that's going to happen. And so you put all this stuff together, China reopening, you know, finally getting out of its one COVID policy, all the geopolitical things that are going on, you know, and this movement that seems to be building to have some of the what the U.S. perceives as adversarial countries begin to work together to circumvent the dollar as a trading vehicle. You put all those things together too. Again, it's pretty hard not to see where, you know, buying yourself some silver at $22 plus whatever, at, you know, spot plus whatever, isn't a pretty good deal for the long run here.
All right. Well, Craig Hemke, before we let you go, did you want to share with the viewers any last thoughts you had, and where can our viewers find you online?
Well, again, just be wary. I think probably of the, what we've discussed here, Elijah, you've got to be patient, but you know, I kind of came up with those three ideas of what should we watch on the spot as you were asking me that question. And I think that's probably the most important point as I look back is what we've discussed. Watch those three things. Watch the jobs report to roll over. Watch inflation come down more than people are expecting just because it's a moving average, that annualized number, right? And understand that once the Fed says they're done, or very likely done, that we're very close historically to cutting. And when all that happens, again, gold will anticipate it, like, you know, gold rallied already, $350, 20 some odd percent off its lows. You just don't want to get flat footed. This is all part of what we discuss every day here at my site. Been doing it now for 12 and a half years. And we continue to do it. If you want to join us, there's still a coupon code through about Valentine's Day. So a few more days, which by a monthly subscription, you enter a coupon code of 2023 and you get half off your first month. It'll save you $7.50, but you can go buy yourself a Happy Meal with that and come kick the tires on my site. So go to tfmetalsreport.com, join us. I think it's pretty good money well spent, especially here in 2023.
Fantastic. Craig, once again, thank you so much for your time and God bless.
You're the man. Always good to visit with you, Elijah.
Miles Franklin Precious Metals is one of America's oldest and most trusted bullion dealers. Miles Franklin is A-plus rated and accredited by the Better Business Bureau, licensed and bonded, and has zero complaints ever registered. Here at Liberty and Finance, we are licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. To order, simply call us, discuss your needs, and we can let you know our live inventory, prices, and availability, and lock in your order over the phone. Once your order is locked, the price is held for you regardless of market fluctuations, and the metals are reserved for you awaiting your settled payment. Within one business day of ordering, you will receive an email invoice detailing the order and payment instructions. Miles Franklin accepts payments by bank wire, ACH or electronic check, money order, check mailed priority mail, and cryptocurrency. The fastest forms of payment are bank wire and cryptocurrency. Upon settled payment, Metals will ship out within 3 to 5 business days. You will receive tracking information via email. Domestic shipping charges are $15 for any order under 500 ounces of silver or 10 ounces of gold. For orders larger than that, domestic shipping is free. The package will be boxed, fully insured, and labeled discreetly, with no indication of the contents inside. For your privacy, the name Miles Franklin will not even be on the package. To talk to myself, Kaiser, my brother Elijah, or my father Dunnigan, call 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.